Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for the dawn of America of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. Welcome to another edition of Banal of America, Summer of Strangeness. And I don't know about where you all live, but you can feel it. You can feel the summer winding down. You can smell it in the air. I don't know if anyone else has this experience, but I always, like, at this time of year, you can, right about now, this time of the evening, this time of the month of August, it's like, oh, okay, I can kind of smell that crispness in the air. Well, that's how it is here in Massachusetts. But we're still enjoying the summer of strangeness. It's still in play. We've got a few more weeks of summer left. Of course, next weekend is Labor Day weekend, and we'll be back for that one, and on and on and on. But tonight, we've got a really fantastic show, I think. I'm really looking forward to this one for a while now. We set it up a few weeks ago, and I've been, as I said, looking forward to it since then. Our guest tonight is Allison Jornland. She's been in the paranormal for a really long time, and as I was saying to her before we started the show tonight, I'm kind of amazed we haven't crossed paths. I've heard her work mentioned on the show. I think she's in the Seth Breedlove, one of the Seth Breedlove movies, and I think I saw her in that. But I don't get out as much as I used to, especially with this coronavirus. But even then, I don't attend a lot of these events and stuff. And I've pulled further and further back from social media. So I feel like I'm getting further and further disconnected, in a sense, from the field, which is part of what we've been doing this summer of strangeness, is talking to people who somehow I haven't talked to yet. After all these years. So with all that said, as I said, our guest tonight is Allison Jornland, and people probably know her best for her work looking into this Chicago Mothman story, and we're going to get into that right away. And she's really, really prolific. That's what I've been amazed by as I've looked at more and more of her stuff. And I love people like that. The folks who, longtime listeners, know that. You know, the Nick Redferns, the people who can kind of speak to all the different fields and have an understanding of all the different fields, those are my favorite folks in the field in general. So she's founded a Milwaukee Ghost Walk Company. I believe it was the first one, but we're going to get into that as well. And she's recently put together, she just launched a new channel showcasing pioneering women in the field of the paranormal. So as I said, she cuts across all these different realms. And we're going to get into all of them here tonight on the program. So, Allison Jornland, thank you very much for coming on Banal of America Audio.
Oh, thank you so much, Tim. I really appreciate the opportunity.
So, you know, we start out. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
It's all good. It's all good. We always start out with the bio, the background, you know.
Yeah.
You know, tell us, who is Allison Jornland, and how did you get interested in the strange and unusual?
Well, I think I was a weird kid. I think a lot of paranormal investigators admit to that. And I just was always fascinated by those eternal questions of, you know, what happens after we die, and are we really alone in this plane of existence, or are there other intelligences? I mean, so all those ideas, even as a fourth grader, really captivated me. I remember, you know, being around 9 or 10 and just being fascinated and reading all the books in the local Big Bend Library. I grew up in Big Bend, Wisconsin. And, yeah, and just diving into the school library as well and reading books on Bigfoot and UFOs and ghosts. And so I've always had an interest in the paranormal and the Fortean. So I always wanted to do something with that. And, you know, I've been looking into things, you know, by myself for years. But then, you know, back in 2006, I became a teacher, an elementary school teacher, actually. Those are the spookiest. You got to watch out for us. but anyway, so, yeah, you know, we wear those big pumpkin sweaters and, you know, terrifying things like that. But, you know, being an elementary teacher afforded me some summer freedom. And so I was like, oh, I know what I'm going to do with that. I'm going to start a haunted history tour. And I live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and we didn't have a haunted history tour. We had nothing like that. And I had always been fascinated in ghosts, especially. And this makes me sound much older, but when Halloween would roll around in you know, my household, my mother, who listened to the big Chicago radio stations, would always gather me and my little brother around the radio, and we listened to haunted tales of Chicagoland from Richard T. Crow, who was an inspiration to me. He really started haunted tourism in the United States in 1973, which is the same year that, you know, the London ghost tours began. And
I didn't know that.
So yeah, that really captivated me, you know, this idea that, you know, you could hunt ghosts in the present, throughout history, you know, and bring that knowledge to people. And so I decided, well, I'm going to dig up everything I need to do to start a Milwaukee tour. And, you know, that's still going on. Now we have two tours. And even beyond that, my brother, he lives in Madison, Wisconsin. And I was like, bro, you got to do this. You got to start a haunted history tour in Wisconsin's capital. It's a natural. You're interested in this weird stuff, too. So we got together and, you know, I helped him, you know, just get started with it. And then he just, like, took off. And he started the company American Ghost Walks. And now we have, it's like 13 walks going on right now across the country, including one in that I most recently wrote for Maui. So at Lahaina in Maui, we have a ghost walk that is even going on now during COVID. And hopefully they're experiencing some scares, renewed scares now in Hawaii. So with COVID, so hopefully we'll be able to continue taking small groups in Maui, but we'll have to see how that goes. And we also have a tour in San Juan, Puerto Rico. So that we started just after Christmas past year. So yeah, it's a burgeoning business, and I'm just really excited to be in it. And, you know, this idea of resurrecting stories, I guess that's what it is. Resurrecting these tales of people that have gone before us and bringing them back into people's minds. I mean, that's what does it for me in terms of the tours, bringing history back to people in a meaningful way.
Gotcha.
So,
all right.
That's the story.
All right. Now,
you know,
I
should interject too. That involves some paranormal investigation as well, because what happened is starting this haunted history tour in Milwaukee started providing a weekly forum, at least during the warm months, because it gets quite cold here in Wisconsin. But during the warmer months, people had this weekly forum, you know, to come on the tour and talk about their ghost stories. So what started to happen is I began to receive requests from people for a paranormal investigation. And I don't do that myself, but there's experts in the Milwaukee area that I rely on. And whenever someone has the need for a paranormal investigation, you know, I go out with my team of choice, Paranormal Investigators of Milwaukee, and we investigate the historic location. So that's been a lot of fun for me. And I've gotten to, you know, be a Ghostbuster, I guess. I mean, for me, being involved in the paranormal field is really exciting and a lifelong dream.
Yeah, it's quite the community. That's for sure. Now, as I alluded to when we started the show, my first sort of you first kind of came on my radar through this Chicago Mothman. I actually was going to ask you, is that the same thing as the Lake Michigan Mothman? But then I looked at a map, and I assume it must be because Lake Michigan's like next to Chicago, so I can't imagine.
There's two
Mothmen running around over there.
Yeah, the claimants in this grab for Mothman heritage, you know, keep extending their area. Now they've
I'm very dubious. Yeah, as you'll hear as we get going into this, I'm very dubious about the whole thing, which is why I'm a big fan of your investigation into this case. This is kind of like I think I can't be the only one who this is how you first came to my attention. Because I had been hearing a lot of this buzz about this Mothman thing, and I kind of rolled my eyes, and I guess I was right to roll my eyes, because you kind of put boots on the ground and got to the bottom of this story and really added another dimension to it. And I'm pretty purposely vague here because I don't want to do the story. I don't want to tell your story. So I guess let's start out with tell people, like, I guess take us through your investigation into this, how this whole thing came about. Because like I said, I think my personal experience was I heard like one or two stories, and I'm like, oh, those are kind of interesting. And then all of a sudden it ballooned up to like 50, and I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Okay, there aren't 50 people have not seen a fucking Mothman like in Chicago. Get out of here. And if there's a point where, you know, you can have an open mind, but at some point you have such an open mind that your brain falls out. So I was when it reached 50 people, that's when I reached down and pilled my brain and put it back in my head and said, okay, hold the phone here. So then, you know, then I heard that about your work, and then it was just kind of like, all right, erase this off the whiteboard. I don't need to deal with this Chicago Mothman thing again. So talk about how this came about and how you got involved and what you uncovered in your investigation.
Well, I never intended to be a debunker or a paranormal muckraker.
Right.
I really didn't. I mean, I came at it with extreme naivete, I guess you would say, because I just was excited that, you know, I live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Okay, it's not exactly close to Chicago, but, you know, it's a two-hour car drive. So, you know, 2 hours back and forth. And I said, well, okay, Allison, if you're really serious about the paranormal, if you're interested in investigation, here's your opportunity. You know, it can't be too far away for somebody who really cares about this. You got to get your feet on the ground because getting boots on the ground, as you say.
Yeah.
I mean, that seemed to me like step number one for paranormal investigation. You got to see the scene, you know? And
absolutely.
I just felt like there were a lot of claims being made and nobody was actually doing that. So I was like, okay, well, here's my opportunity. I can do that. I can, yes, it's true, drive back and forth umpteen times between Milwaukee and Chicago for months and months and document these sighting locations for YouTube. Now, I don't know how I actually did it, but I did it. I went to all the sites that were reported for 2011. There's a handful there. And then I went to the 55-some sites. And the reason I say 55-some is because there's a map where these are all located.
Yeah.
And the map sometimes changes and things are taken off the map. And so I just went to try to get to all of them that were up there in 2017. And, you know, since then, you know, we've lost a handful of them. So let's say about 55 sightings in 2017. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to all of them. I just want to get this done,
yeah.
Go to all of them. I'm going to document the scene. I'm going to follow in the footsteps of witnesses, and I'm just going to report what I see there. That's it. But
right.
I think it's
now,
valuable.
Now, let me just stop. Let me just stop you and backtrack just for people, because we kind of want to catch people up in a sense. It's like, where the hell?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I know this, but, like, where did this come from? How did this start? And what are people reporting seeing? Because, that way we know what you're looking for when you go to do the investigation. So what – give me the background on this case, if you will.
So the original case, you know, people are probably familiar.
Yeah, they know that
with
one.
John
Keel,
yeah. And, you know, what went on in Point Pleasant from – you know, 1966 to 1967. There were also similar sightings in Kent, England. I went there as well for something else, for other research. But I went to the sites of the 1963 Mothman, since I was already there in Kent. So what people purport to see is, you know, this 7-8 feet tall humanoid, dark colored creature with a wingspan of 10 to 12 feet. Now, it is variously described as having a head, not having a head, sometimes having these prominent red eyes that bore into your soul. And, you know, so it's pretty, like, frightening creature. And I just, you know, I would just wanted to get out there and be nibbled on by it, just a little. And, you know, I would tell my husband, hey, you know, if I don't come back, make sure, no matter what happens to me, I want you to put on my tombstone that I was eaten by a Mothman. Okay? That's what needs to go on the tombstone. If I don't make it back. So what happened in Chicagoland is the first report in 2017 to come to light was from Oz Park, which is in downtown Chicago. It's a very busy area, you know, right on the Gold Coast there. I mean, it's really like the central area of Chicago. And, you know, I'm from Milwaukee, and, you know, I know Chicago, but for many of these sighting locations, what was reported was implausible, just because when I was there, you know, umpteen times at all times of day and night, I was constantly trampled by people. So what is more mysterious to me is if it was really, really showing up in that populated an area, you know, like we're talking about 9 million people in the metropolitan area there. So if it was really showing up in those spots that have been named in downtown Chicago, why didn't more people report it? I mean, why don't we have more photos of this? Because it's not small, and it's huge and imposing. So as I began to go to the scenes of these reports, that became more prominent in my mind. At first, I was just like, I want to find a monster. And
yeah,
this sounds
yeah.
like a fun summer project. And so I'm going to do this. And but then as I started to document these locations for youtube.com/Mothman, you can go there right now and look at my videos. And the idea of that was to open this up and to say, hey, people, here it is. You've heard about these reports, you know, in various media, because even NPR covered it. They didn't cover me, but they covered the wild claims. And,
right.
You know, you can go for yourself and take a look at these locations and see what you think. Make up your own mind as to the veracity of these sightings. And as you said, the other thing that seemed peculiar to me was that there were so many sightings, you know. So the first one was April 7th, 2017, I believe. That was the first one to come to light. But then there were sightings that began to be posted about even before that, going all the way back to February of 2017. And then there were like three reports from 2011 that had been reported a long time ago. But
right.
In 2017, I couldn't understand the proliferation of all of these reports. And what was really troubling for me, Tim, was as I visited more and more scenes, I started to see these discrepancies. There were inconsistencies between the accounts and the locations. And when supposedly employees at the sighting location, you know, should have had some knowledge, you know, I never found anybody that was like, oh, yeah, I heard about that. Let me just back up on that. There was one that was pretty funny to me because, okay, so it's in Little Village, which is just a vibrant neighborhood in Chicago, and it's a vibrant Mexican neighborhood, and I had never been there before, so I was glad to, you know, have an opportunity to check out some of these sites just so I could see what cool things they had there, because I don't usually, like, explore Chicago for any other reason.
Yeah.
So
right.
One of the sighting locations was Petroski Park, and that was October 29th, 2017. And it was it's right in Little Village. It's a community. There's a little community center right there. Community center has a parking lot. Apparently, the Friday before I was there, so I went there like roughly a week after, so that following Saturday, I'll say. So when I arrived, I, you know, checked out the scene, my video, and then I went inside because I'm like, great, the community center is open. I'm going to go in there and talk to the staff. And I was like, hey, you know, I'm investigating the Mothman. And they were like, yeah. and I was surprised at their response, because instead of like rolling their eyes at me or just like walking away, like some people do when you ask them about things that are paranormal, instead they came to the front desk excitedly, and they're like, oh yeah, we've been following, you know, the cases of the Mothman. And I'm like, yeah? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, do you know that he was in your parking lot last weekend? And they're like, what? And to me, these people were really into the idea of the Mothman being in Chicago. And so for them not to know that that a couple was attacked in their car in the parking lot the Friday before just seemed suspicious to me. And also, when I went to the location, I saw how busy the streets are going right by that parking lot. And you can imagine what it would have been like on Friday 10/27, which is essentially, that would have been the Halloween weekend celebration in that area. And then Day of the Dead after that. So it would have been overrun with celebrants. Just the week before, when this was said to go on. So for them to have no knowledge was really shocking to me. And there's other specifics I can address as well, but, you know, it just seemed like more and more of this was cropping up. Instead of finding a monster, I was finding something else, something I didn't expect.
Right. Yeah, it's very interesting. And so out of all these, let's say ballpark 50, was there any of them that even remotely you were like, all right, this may have been a creature? Or was it pretty much across the board you're like, all right, none of this holds up?
Well, Tim, I think we need witnesses. We need witnesses that come forward. The difference, the huge, huge difference between the Chicagoland or the Lake Michigan Mothman, as they're now calling it, is that when you're talking about the original Mothman cases that we know so well in Point Pleasant, you know, that was the 60s, 66 to 67. There were over 100 witnesses that came forward publicly. And many of them are still alive today.
So, like, none of these people who have claimed to seen this thing have come forward? There's got to be one, right? Is there anyone who's come?
Well, there are three.
Oh, three. Oh, okay. Three out of 50.
Okay. But we got to talk about the details of those accounts, those three very different accounts. But let's back up a little bit before I get to that. So, I'm running into all these inconsistencies, Tim. And then I went to the Chicago Ghost Conference that Ursula Bielski puts on, and she was having me speak there about my expeditions. And I ran into Sam Maranto, who is the head of Illinois MUFON. And I know, you know, you can't say the word, can't say the name MUFON now, because bad things that have frankly happened in the organization among certain members, but it shouldn't give the whole organization a black eye. So Sam Maranto, he's always been a good guy to me, and there's no negative things that I think anybody could say about him and his investigation technique. So he had Illinois move on, and he was watching my videos. He came to meet me at my table at the ghost conference, and he knew who I was. So it's kind of like this, Tim. You know, you just make these videos, you put them up there, and you hope somebody's watching them, but you don't know for sure.
Right.
you don't know that anybody knows about all this money and time that you're spending to really like tilt at a windmill, pretty much. I mean, that's what I'm doing here.
Right.
So it was amazing to me that he had watched all my videos and he said, wow, you know, I love what you're doing. And here's what we found at MUFON about some of these reports. So he had looked at a lot of the case reports as well with a very critical eye. And he found other inconsistencies between like weather data that was reported, was supposedly reported by the witness that day. Now, I'm not saying, I guess they got to be clear, because I am skeptical. I think through these things. You know, people tend to think that I'm a dogmatic skeptic, or that they want to portray me that way, or that I don't respect witness claims. And that couldn't be further from the truth. I just have to have some witnesses that come forward. And, you know, I have to be sure that, you know, these reports aren't just, you know, coming out of somebody's head and, you know, there's some veracity to them. So yes, I'm skeptical, but I'm not trying to be a professional skeptic. I mean, professional skeptics don't do the things that I've done. And thankfully, I've had my own experiences, because after the bad experiences I went through, you know, which have been a real eye-opener for me, Tim, a real education through this whole Mothman debacle, if I didn't have my own experiences, I'd be running into the love arms of Richard Dawkins by now. But I have, I know that that some of what is said is real. And to me, that's what makes investigation all the more important. We have to separate the wheat from the chaff. So what Sam Maranto was telling me is that, you know, he's looking at the nitty-gritty on these reports. Let's check the weather data and see if we can match it up. Oh, no, we can't match it up. That's a problem. Or, you know, if it was a report from, you know, on the water, how many knots were we coming at? You know, I mean, he really looks for in areas that I didn't even think of. And then the moon phases. Oh, they reported a full moon. Was it a full moon that night, or was it even close to full? And so he was looking at details too. And he found a lot of inconsistencies as well, which is what you would expect if these reports were made up. So let's get back to – oh, and one more thing. I can't let this one go. So the smoking gun, the thing that really got me was Sam said that MUFON had received some of the reports as well. Mm-hmm. And so let me just say the purveyors of these reports in general have been three different websites. One big one is the primary source, and everybody talks about this one, you know, as their source of choice in the paranormal for some reason. So anyway, these were the posters, the people posting about these sightings. And so he said, hey, MUFON also received a handful of reports. We received seven reports of the Mothman as well, you know, throughout 2017. I'm like, yeah? And he's like, yeah. And what we found out is there were some that were coming from the same IP address. So they received, yeah, and we don't know that for, we don't know what the IP data is for, the IP address data is for all the reports, because MUFON only received seven reports. So
okay, and some of them, and some of them came from the same IP address.
Yeah, five of those reports came from the same IP address. So let me break that down a little bit. So five of them were suspicious in that way, and there were two of those five that came from the very same IP address, and then a later three of them that also came from a single IP address. So that, to me, means that, you know, with the way that IP addresses are distributed, they are most likely coming from the same computer. You know, that's how police are able to track down, you know, perpetrators of different internet crimes, is that
right. Wow, that's wild. I didn't. Yeah, this is news to me. See, okay, all right. I was just under the impression that the on-site observations didn't add up with the witness accounts. I didn't even realize that it got even worse than worse than that.
Yeah,
all right.
And there's actually one. You know, they're like, the reports are, when you read the reports, they're very much like stories.
Right.
Much more than when you look at a site, like when you look at a National UFO Reporting Center reports, as I often do for Wisconsin, or MUFON's database of reports, you'll see that, you know, you don't get full-blown stories. You're not getting
about,
I was taking my kid to soccer practice, or, you know, I'm a police officer, I'm this, or I'm that.
You get something like blue ball on, you know, blue ball in the sky on a Wednesday at 3. That's all you get.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, you know, work with that, folks. Work with that one. You don't get great reports.
Tell you their life story or give you too much detail, which is, you know, when you are trying to determine the veracity of somebody's claims, you know, real police investigators look for too much detail in what somebody is saying. So when you're reading these reports, you know, keep that in mind. But one of the reports in, I believe it was July of 2017, said it came from a police officer. And in the text, it said that the police officer filed a police report. So that was really exciting to me, Tim, because that's a public record.
In general,
you
should be able to get your hands
hands on police reports. But so far in all my searching, there does not seem to be a police report for that neighborhood, anywhere around that neighborhood, the Auburn-Grisham neighborhood where it was reported, of anything like, you know, a Mothman or even like a suspicious individual or animal report or anything like that. And not only I have searched, the Chicago Tribune reporter who did a story on the Mothman sightings I actually tried to track that down as well and did not find it. Okay, so let's go back to the witness problem, as we were talking about before. So,
So you say, we'll sort of reset you. We'll reboot a little here. So you're saying there's not enough witnesses. You're just dealing with these written reports, some of which are suspect because of this IP issue. And a lot of them read, what I'm thinking of as you're describing these, and I've read them myself too, what they read like is like Reddit posts. Especially some of those Reddit fiction posts. I mentioned this last week.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, like creepypasta. Like I mentioned this last week to the guys from Liminal Earth. I love, there's a Reddit group called Let's Not Meet. It's like people who have creepy encounters. And like they're always really well written. They're ostensibly true, but there's always, even I read them and sometimes I roll my eyes, and like every story there's always someone that's like, great story, too bad it's bullshit. And like so you never know what's true and what isn't. You have to suspend disbelief if you're going to read the story. That's what a lot of these stories also sounded like. When you look at them, because they're just like, they're like Reddit posts. They're like paragraphs of, the moon was still that night, and I was wondering if I would get home in time because I had put my laundry in. It's like, oh, fucking what? Where is this going? Did you see a moth guy or what? It's like someone's fiction class.
It's full of tropes. They're full of tropes too. They're like, and then the mothman. The mouseman shot up into the air like a rocket, and I saw his silhouette in front of the moon.
Exactly. Oh, and like, and then I smelled
Reddit
cigars like my dead grandfather smoked, and it's like, what? Where's this all coming from?
Yeah.
All right. So you got so that's the problem. But there are three witnesses,
there are three witnesses.
Yes. Let's
go
with the three witnesses
right now.
What's going on with them? Okay.
Okay. So there's one witness named John, and he was at a club called the Owl on 2500 North Milwaukee Avenue on June 20th, 2017, and he's the bouncer there. So he was outside of the club, and it's about 10:30 at night, and he sees this strange, like, pterosaur type creature. He described it as a pterodactyl type creature. The body apparently was 5 to 5.5 foot in length and grayish, and he saw it flying above the streetlights, like gliding in the air, and you know, it just kind of did a flyby and then disappeared.
Yeah.
And there was no sound. So okay, is that Mothman, Tim? It's a pterodactyl. Okay, it's a flying creature. I'll give you that. It's a flying creature, right? But
yeah. It
doesn't sound like Mothman. And it's interesting that the measurements, of course, there's disparity in. But, you know, that could be with any accounts, just because measurements are so hard to gauge. But, again, it's not a man-shaped creature with wings. It looks like a pterodactyl with with that kind of pterodactyl face. So it's not the big, red, burrowing, horrific eyes that are so commonly associated with the traditional Mothman sightings. So,
right, it's not like humanoid either, right? It doesn't sound humanoid.
Right, it's not humanoid. So it's not a flying humanoid. Then we also have one from downtown Chicago, Franklin Tapp. This is Willis Tower. Oh, my gosh. One of the highest buildings in the world, Willis Tower, 233 South Wacker Drive. So there's a guy that I forget his name, but he has come forward publicly, and he was on one of the shows that has come out recently about the Chicago Mothman. And he worked at the Franklin Tap. And he was outside as well, smoking a cigarette. And what he saw was this human-like figure. Okay, so it's human-like. It's standing near the top of the building, and it's perched. And it looks like a 6-foot human with these tall wings. But it's a green mantis man. and it jumps from the roof and shoots straight down and then swoops upwards and disappears in a northerly direction. So it's a dark green color and had a body form like that of a giant mantis. So is that Mothman, Tim? That sound like what they described in Point Pleasant?
Yeah, I don't know what that is, but it doesn't sound like the Mothman. Well, that before we get to the other witness, I do want to say, that just to get on my soapbox for a minute, one of the things that really irritates me about this whole case is, it's just so cheap to call it Mothman. Like, it just, to me, it's like you're biting off of the fame of this awesome story that everybody loves. That's why you're biting off of the fame of it. But it's like, get your own fucking thing. You know, that's my attitude. Like, do your own thing. It's like, it reminds me of like the Texas Chupacabras. It's like, those aren't Chupacabras. Those aren't the classic Chupacabras. Stop calling them that. That's how I feel about this Chicago. And I'm not talking about you, Allison. You're stuck. You have to deal with the hand you've been dealt. But to me, it's like, whoever decided that this was Mothman, you're wrong. Like, Mothman was West Virginia, man. That was, no one's going around like the Dover Demon. No one's going around sticking the Dover Demon in Mobile, Alabama.
Now we're here.
Yeah, and going, like the Mobile Demon. It's like, it's kind of like the Dover Demon, but it's the Mobile Demon. Buy my book. It's like, no, that you can't do that. That's so cheap. That's how I feel about that. Come up with your own fucking name. Just come up with your own name for this thing.
We've got it. Deal with that.
I'm stepping off the soapbox now, so we
can. Something that bothers me as well. No. I'm jumping on. I'm jumping back on the soapbox with you to say that it seems like a heritage grab. You know,
everybody
loves John
Keel.
Everybody loves the Mothman prophecies. Everybody knows that. Even skeptics know it. You know, has this compelling story, and it's like we're gonna ride right on those coattails. And there's a reason for that, unfortunately, that I figured out. And we can talk about that in a minute. So another report where we have a witness, Billy Vance, and I'm not finding it in my notes here, but it happened in Cicero. It was also 2017. And in Cicero, there's this trucker named Billy Vance, and there's this bread company, and he's picking up a load. And he notices outside his truck that, hey, there's this thing in the sky. And so he takes a closer look, and he says it's a vehicle. It's like a Batmobile in the sky. It is kind of boxy, you know, like bulky looking with these scalloped wings. And he only saw one side, so he only saw the one wing. And he's like, this is some kind of, I don't know what, but he didn't say Mothman. And again, this jumping on the bandwagon, trying to throw everything in the same basket bothers me, because that's not paranormal investigation. That's selling a narrative.
It's marketing.
And
that's marketing.
Yeah, and so that's what I started noticing. And, you know, to me, the real disrespect to witnesses is doing something for financial gain, you know, that compromises all your principles, you know, just so you can sell a story when there's real witnesses out there who are struggling with extraordinary experiences and frightening sightings they can't explain. And now they have nowhere to go because you're clouding up the channels with all this bogus material. So, try to do what we are saying here today, you know, the particular verbiage of the accounts and how they're laid out, and try to construe, and because they've done this to me before, try to construe that, you know, our laughter about it or is in some way, you know, shaming witnesses. And that's not the intention here. And I know it's not your intention either. You know, we're laughing.
No. Witnesses are cool. We need witnesses. They're the bread and butter of all this, witnesses. So, no one's,
right.
You know, if you're brave enough to report something, then more power to you. So, but it's like we can, as you said, without the witnesses, the physical witnesses, with only written accounts, that's all we can go on. It's like, hey, no one's, you know, no one's, you know, we only have the written accounts. We're not even. It's nothing personal. That's probably the best way to put it. Like,
yeah.
We can only work with what
right.
you've sent us. So you know, if you think that what Allison uncovered is about your sighting is wrong, then, you know, contact her. I have a feeling no one's contacted
yes.
you to go, hey, you went to the CVS in downtown and you didn't see the Mothman, but what I meant was that it was a Walgreens. Like, you haven't had anything like
right.
that happen, I assume.
No, I haven't, unfortunately. But, you know, I'm opening it up. If people have had authentic sightings, that's what I want to look into. I think
right.
it's really important in paranormal investigation that we not just grandstand, that we separate the wheat from the chaff. You know, that's hugely, hugely important. And I think, you know, I'm glad that you wanted to have me on because, you know, I've been on a skeptical podcast a couple of times, a few here and there. But, you know, the big podcast, you know, they're interested because they don't want to look like they are being skeptical. And to me, I just don't get that. I mean, if something is a hoax, I think we want to know. I mean, there's enough authentic paranormal activity that we don't need to make something up. If that has no hoax, you got to get up and say it. You can't just let it go on. Because if you do, then real witnesses, they won't have a place go that isn't run by hucksters. You know, they won't have any outlet. I mean, it's bad enough as it is to know who to do. But if you're not out there doing really investigative work, then you're only getting in the way of being a paranormal phenomena. So that's me on my soapbox. I'm really great at getting up on one.
Well, it's interesting. It's the point, too, that is worth mentioning is, and you're breaking up a little bit on me. I don't know if you've moved around at all since we started the show, but
okay.
I don't know. See if you can. I don't know. People say that to me all the time, and it's like, I don't know what to do. Should I stand on a chair?
Yeah.
How do I know how to make it not break up? I'm not Alexander Graham Bell.
I've been pretty much in the same spot. Sorry about that. I'd be glad.
It's all right, but
again, though.
No, I think we're okay. If it keeps up, then we might want to figure something out. Maybe
yeah.
maybe then maybe switch to the Skype or something. But it's I think what you're saying is really important, and to take it a step further, it's like the paranormal research community is really resource starved. So when you get in a situation like this, where if this story is as flimsy as it sounds, like
yeah.
For people who don't want to take an honest look at it and have an honest assessment, by extension, they're kind of like this flimsy story is like taking other people's spots. It's taking up other people's research
yeah.
spots. It's taking up other people's, you know, someone might buy a book about this when there's really apparently nothing to it, when they could be buying a book of somebody else's. You know what I'm saying? And so it's like,
absolutely.
To me, it's like it's kind of like you're saying. You got to separate the wheat from the chaff. You know, if there's nothing to the story, if the story doesn't add up, then you know, best move on. That's kind of my attitude, rather than try and belabor it or anything like that. So, but yeah, to me, that's kind of where I see it too. Where it's like,
yeah,
again, it's taking attention away from other cases that have more going for them, more veracity, by virtue, again, to go back to what we were talking about, because of this Mothman thing. Because it's like, oh, cause,
right.
you know, who's, it, like, I know you were on the CW last night for Mysteries Dakota, and it was a Mothman thing, so I
yeah.
figure it must be involving this, but
yes.
since they had you on, I take it you got to, and we can get to that in a minute, so we don't, I don't want to curly
right.
go off on a tangent, but, you know, it's like, I assume they provided a even-handed take on it if you were on there, which is good. But the you know there's other shows, other books, other things, you know, other media pursuits, other guest spots on shows and stuff like that, where it's like, well, you know, that's somebody else's spot. That spot should be going to a story that has a little more heft to it, based on what we've uncovered, what you've uncovered. So, you know, based on you know, what the field has uncovered. So I forget where we were off on this, but.
Well, I want to just follow up on one point that we were hovering over for a little bit there. So you said as the sightings started to mount, you became more and more suspicious. And so, you know, the same is true of a lot of people who are looking on. And then I wonder how many people were thinking about the year and the significance and pondering, why so many sightings in 2017? And it wasn't immediately clear to me either until a book came out about it on the 50th anniversary of the Silver Bridge collapse, which was December 15th, 2017.
Oh.
So, yes, what you were saying before about riding on coattails or stealing somebody else's thunder, you know, this to me is the most egregious, you know, point of that, which is perhaps maybe even engineering these sightings so that there's a sighting in enough time so that you can publish a book right on the 50th anniversary. Now, the Silver Bridge collapse, for people who might not remember, and it wasn't immediately apparent to me either, you know, as I'm investigating these Chicagoland cases, I didn't make the connection to Point Pleasant. But in Point Pleasant, the Silver Bridge, which served Point Pleasant, collapsed on December 15th, 1967, and that's thought to be the culmination of the Mothman events in Point Pleasant, that maybe Mothman was the harbinger of that disaster. You know, certainly that's how it's been portrayed. So the idea of dredging the memories of those people up and saying, oh, you know, maybe it's going to happen again in Chicago, is really gruesome to me, that all those people lost their lives in the Ohio River. You know, one of the purveyors of these accounts, the main one, wants to actually give me a bath in the Ohio River, which maybe we want to talk about later.
Well, that was kind of, that's a good segue, because that we can kind of move on a little bit. I think we've made the case here for what you've uncovered. So now, to set the stage, I guess, for people who are kind of like, what the, this is a little bit inside baseball, but that's, we do that a lot on this program. So there's this, you know, there's, for lack of a better, there's excitement about this thing. People are talking about it. Books coming out, you know, newspaper articles, website articles. There's a buzz around this Chicago Mothman. And then you are like, hold on, I've actually looked into this rather than just print shit on a website. And turns out maybe that there's probably not a Chicago Mothman. And here's why. And then you got, there was, that's, you mentioned a debacle. This is the debacle. So I guess what the hell happened here? You know, talk about this pushback you got. And I will say this. I mean, you and I have a lot of mutual friends and a lot of folks that that I'm good, really good friends with, who I have a lot of respect for, like Seth Breedlove, Lauren Coleman.
Yeah.
You know, and they're you know, they speak very highly of you. So it's like, to me, I don't under, like, the pushback, and you can hone in on this as much as you'd like, but the pushback seems to be coming from just a very small pocket of people who really want this thing to be real for reasons, you know, that may have to do with their bank account. But the greater community, you haven't been, like, shunned from the paranormal for uncovering this. If anything, you've been celebrated for having looked into this and taken an honest approach. So, I mean, I guess that's a sort of overall blanket, like, kudos to the paranormal community, because, you know, back in the day, like you said, people would see you as some kind of arch skeptic, where it's like, no, you just genuinely wanted to find out more about these things, and you were like, oh, shit, hold the phone. What's going on with these? This ain't Mothman, man. So, so talk about the pushback. Talk about this, what you know, the debacle, and feel, you know, tell us what happened. You know, if you want to talk about the thing earlier in the summer, that was quite a quite a mess. But yeah, talk about all this.
So there's three people in particular. You probably know who they are. And, you know, if you've been following this at all. And, you know, really, I thought I was friends with these people. Oh, my gosh. I am so naive. I just want to be friends with everybody, Tim. Oh, it's the elementary teacher in me coming out. Let's all sing Kumbaya and hold hands. I guess it can't happen like I dreamed it. But, you know, when I started this, you know, as I said, I wasn't going into it to be a debunker. And I actually had all three of these people on a podcast that I work on. And so when, you know, early on, before, you know, I went to many of these sites, I'm like, oh, let's get them on. This is really happening. And so actually I introduced one of these people to the other two, and which I regret, or maybe not. Maybe it's good to know, you know, who your friends really are. But it's a shock. It's a shock because really all I wanted is I thought I was supposed to be an investigator, you know. It's like this is what I wanted to do, separate the wheat from the chaff. And let me say I am not saying – that all of these are bunk. You know, we've got three witnesses. Maybe they saw something. And as you mentioned, you mentioned Seth Breedlove. You mentioned Terror in the Skies. He did have me in that movie. And in that movie, I think he makes a really compelling case about all these Thunderbird sightings in Illinois in particular. But I'm from Wisconsin, and I know there's also been – you know, we border Illinois, for people who don't know that. There's been many Thunderbird sightings here as well. And, you know, that's one of my first forays into the paranormal was finding out when my brother gave me a big UFO book for Christmas and we were at a family gathering. And, you know, people saw, you know, the big weirdo what I got for Christmas. And they were like, hey, you like UFOs? And then everybody started telling me their story. So it was really, really nice. You know, it wasn't one of those stiff, you know, awkward family parties. I really enjoyed it that night because I got to hear all the paranormal dirt that you know, these people have been holding in for years. So my cousin, actually, he told me I saw a dragon. And, I mean, he was not kidding at all. He was in Brookfield, Wisconsin, in a hospital waiting room, actually awaiting the birth of his first son. This waiting room has huge floor-to-ceiling windows, and he was just lazily looking out the window, and he saw what he described as a Piper Cub plane in wingspan. So those are about 21 feet wingspan wise. And, you know, he was in the Navy, so he's somewhat familiar with planes. And so when he saw it, he's like, oh, that is huge. It reminds me of a Piper Cub plane. And then as he described it to me and he drew me a picture of it, it did look to me like a pterodactyl, the distinctive head and so forth, and the leathery wings. And, you know, this is someone in my family that I've known all my life. He's only had one of these weird sightings and never anything again. I mean, he'd love to have a ghost experience. He loves ghosts like me. But, again, when he has paranormal stories to tell, this is his only one. And so this happened in 1988 to him. And then, you know, when I published that story online, you know, there were other people that came forward. So, I mean, this, I was publishing this in 2000. So, you know, and then more people came forward. So I know there's a history of these giant bird reports in the Midwest. And again, you know, if you watch Terror in the Skies, you'll see some really cool newspaper reports that Seth dug up. And I found even more. There's a big flap from 1948, from around the Alton area, but then it also even extends up into the border with Wisconsin. There were so many sightings by so many people of different walks of life. And one of the things that really shocked me is I was in that movie, so when it was coming out, I was doing my own research, and I found all these articles about the 1948 flap in Illinois.
Yeah.
And I was shocked by one of the witnesses in one of those old newspaper articles I dug up. In their description, they describe it as it looked like it reminded them of and it had the wingspan of a Piper Cub plane. And that really shocked me because, you know, way back in 2000, I'm hearing this from my cousin, you know, what the size of this thing is. And then somebody from 1948, you know, echo back in time the same comment. And, you know, he's not, I mean, my cousin didn't dig that article up. He didn't know there was any connection.
Exactly.
And
now,
that's the exciting part, that if there is anything real to this, Tim, it connects to those kind of sightings, you know, that go back generations and keep repeating and are reflected in Midwestern Native American lore in the Thunderbird story. So so all these things tend to connect, and I kept finding, you know, I found articles from 76, 77. You know, then I found articles even further back from 1948. I found articles going back to the early 1900s of similar things being cited. And one actually trying to pick up a child that resembles another case in 1976 from Illinois. So, and that happened in 1909. So I'm not saying there's nothing to this. I, you know, I have a personal connection to it. I
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I tell people that a lot too, actually.
I've used that expression recently. It's like, it's a cliche. It's like, I want to believe it. That's kind of where I'm at. I would like to believe this stuff, but I'm not like one of those, I don't like how it's depicted in X-Files, but it's like, I want to believe. You just got to show me that it's real or not. But anyway, let me take you down a different path here. Let's circle back a bit. I want to know, like, why do you think it is? Because these characters, these Mothman men or Mothman boys, let's be honest, they were, you know, they're putting out this stuff, and you've done the investigation, and you come back to them, and you're like, hey, this doesn't add up. Here, and da-da-da-da-da. And then there was this pushback. I guess, why do you think that was the case? Because personally, if I was, I mean, I've never been in that position. Maybe I'd have a different reaction. But if it was me and I was putting all this effort into, like, little dwarf sightings around Massachusetts or something, and then you came and looked at all the stuff, and you're like, no, like, this couldn't possibly be happening, I'd be like, oh, thank you. Thank you for saving me from looking like a clown down the line by showing that these stories aren't true. So I guess maybe I'd be different. Maybe I'd react like these guys and be like, get the hell out of here. I got a lot invested in these dwarves, Allison. But what do you think was the motivating factor in that pushback you got? Because like I said, I mean, if we're all in this together, if we're all honest investigators, like, I appreciate what you did. They should appreciate what you did. Everybody in the paranormal should appreciate what you did, because you have saved us a lot of time and money and energy. But so what do you think that is all about?
Yeah, I mean, that was a difficult lesson for me to learn, because, again, I thought, oh, we're going to be collaborators. You know, I'm always looking for people to collaborate with. This is going to be great. It's going to be just like on the X-Files or you know, Star Trek Next Generation, where we all work as this crack team, right? We're this crack investigative team. You know, we have each other's backs. You know, I don't know. I'm just deluded on that. I'm not going to be deluded on paranormal stuff, but, you know, I believe in humanity, Tim. So sometimes that gets in my way. So, yeah, I was added to an investigative group for this main blog, and basically what it was a Facebook Messenger group, and I was waiting for something useful to come through. It never did, And when I asked questions, nobody answered me. When I put things in there, it was like crickets, no response. And I was really excited about the police report. I was like, as soon as I found out about that, I was like writing in the group, oh, yes, who has looked into this report? You know, because, maybe if they didn't give it to you, maybe we could try again and use a different format, use different language. And I was ready, I was all in to find that police report. And, when I asked the group, nobody says anything. It's like, is any actual investigation happening? This is supposed to be the investigative group. The main player of accounts did add my maps to his map early on. But then he changed. And the reason is, there was nothing useful provided in the group. And the most useful thing that I found was when I met Sam Maranto, because he had been doing research on this, looking into the various accounts and, cross-checking things. And he shared information with me, whereas nobody in the supposed investigative group did that.
Yeah.
So, I question where these reports are coming from. Where are these witnesses? If there, have been so many accounts, over 100 now, I've stopped going to them because it costs a lot of money to go back and forth to Chicago and a lot of time. And I'm unconvinced that there's anything worthwhile here, unfortunately. I'm asking myself, what is going on here when you have the witnesses that are publicly coming forward for a long time, then there are three that come forward consistently and tell all different stories. And none of them talk about the Mothman. Whereas in West Virginia, you can still go back there today and find witnesses from back in 1967 and 1966 that will tell you the same story. That's why those cases are lauded, and this one should not be, because it cannot meet the same standards, and we have to have standards. So I don't understand exactly why this anger is here, and maybe that shows you that there's something dubious, because, when you express a little bit of doubt, now I'm full on. But in the beginning, I was like, maybe you're being duped. Maybe some of these are hoaxes. Maybe we should be a little bit more critical. And then for just saying something like that, you're kicked out. But really what it was, I think, because this is what happened. I got booted from the investigative group when I went on a podcast with Sam Maranto, and simply we were talking about some of these issues with the very tropey sounding reports, and they didn't like that. They didn't like that we were looking at the reports critically, and then they kicked me out of the group. And then from then on, yes, and actually that night that I was kicked out of the group, I was going to be on Midnight in the Desert when Heather Wade was the host. So it gives you an idea of how far back this goes. And so she would admit to me later that night that originally she didn't want to have me on because she thought that all this Mothman stuff was bunk. She was thinking, she had some suspicious feelings toward it. But then when I got kicked out that night, one of these purveyors of the accounts emailed her right away and said, why are you having Allison on, and said all these scandalous things about me. And then she's like, yes, I'm happy to have Allison on. So it has
effect.
Somebody thought they were sabotaging me, and that keeps happening. That also happened with Lauren Coleman. Lauren Quinn put out a Mothman, updated Mothman book, which had some Chicago Mothman stuff in there and talked about all the different investigators that included me. And when one of these people found out I was going to be in the book with him, he said, "Hey, Lauren, you know," and just really, he knew me beforehand. So Lauren knew me beforehand. Lauren knew that what was said about me was bunk. And of course, Lauren came right back to me. But my question is, Tim, how many other people out there have been poisoned to me, and you know, are thinking bad things about me just because I express some doubt and I want to be a real investigator?
It's pretty disappointing.
Yeah, and then it's still going on, and that's what the big kick up this summer was about. There's another investigator and witness who was in an investigator group, again, on Facebook with these guys, and he just got sick of them trouncing me every opportunity they got because he had heard it repeatedly anytime my name was brought up. They just had all these scurrilous things to say about me. And so he saw, you know, these very offensive and insensitive comments made by these three individuals. And then he's like, you know what? I'm copying this and sending it to her. So, you know, the participants will say, well, this is a private conversation. Well, not if you're in an investigator group with other investigators. It's not a private conversation.
It's a group chat.
You're
gotta
disparaging me in front of other people in the field. And somebody didn't like it. And so they sent me the information. And I'm like, you know what? I'm making this public. It's been 2 years. And still, there's this vitriol. Why is that? You know, I think they protest much.
Exactly. It was an ugly incident, I guess you could say. And you were the victim of that. So I feel really bad for you. And one of the been going on for a while. You're a tough woman. I'm not worried about, you know, you kind of came out on top of this, the whole incident
at
the beginning of the summer, and good for you.
Yeah, maybe they'll just learn to be quiet about me in future, because every time they open their mouths, it seems to backfire on them. So maybe let's not talk crap about people. That's how investigators act. Let's agree to disagree and maybe even get together and talk about our differences. How about that? You know, we don't have to be sworn enemies. You know, we were friends, I thought. And just because I disagree with you, turn against me. I mean, at that the time, you know, I wasn't making allegations. Now I have to speculate, in retrospect, what's going on here. Now that you know, the books and everything that was planned financially ahead of time, you know, why, I've got to speculate. But when I was kicked out and this first started, I wanted to be friends. I wanted to be part of the investigative group. I thought I was doing my job. I thought I was going to get a gold star, Tim. I didn't run out of town because I
well, it's
doubt.
It's very telling.
Disagree.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, it's very telling that one of the messages in the exchange was like, we're in a movie soon, and we're going to have this book come out, and once that happens, everyone's going to be on our side, and then we'll get invited to the conferences. And it's like, what are you like? This is like, I thought you were trying to investigate this thing, or you just want to go to conferences and be a guest. Like, that really spoke volumes to me, where it was like, okay, this is an interpersonal, like, this is just petty jealousy, man. This is not like I take issue with the methods by which she investigated this. It's like, oh, I want the attention, man. This isn't fair. It's like, whoa, bro, really? Come on. I thought we were adults here.
And I didn't think the paranormal was supposed to be a popularity contest, really. I mean, I just thought it's all these investigators that they look into weird things. They find out, you know, that they're on the tail of the secrets of the universe, you know, uncovering, all this ancient knowledge and, you know, incredible discoveries. You know, that's what I wanted it to be. I wanted it to be like high school. God,
Yeah, exactly. It's very unfortunate.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?